All right, good evening, everyone. Parshas Pinchas. The thrill when we learn from a panoramic, big picture perspective is the sense of a landscape. We're not mired by the details, by the nitty-gritties, but we're in tune with the big picture of the subject in Torah. We can kind of feel the pulse, the rhythm of what's going on. And all the little notes, all the little details are all the more melodious. In this regard, when we think of Sefer Bamidbar, Chumash HaPikudim, literally the Book of Censuses, and as we've done in the past, we think of the two censuses of the Sefer, which are divided by almost 40 years. The first census of Parshas Midbar, which counts the people, the Dor HaMidbar, and then the final census of our Parsha, Parshas Pinchas, which counts those who enter the land. And we take a step back and we appreciate. This is not just a technical fact, there are two censuses here, so one of the Svarim and Chumash are called Chumash HaPikudim, or in the vernacular numbers. No, there's something to these two censuses and what they say about the development of Klal Yisrael during this period. The first census of Parshas Midbar reflects the infancy of Jewish development, the period in the Midbar, Matan Torah, and so forth. And the census of our Parsha reflects the new stage called entering the land. And when we compare and contrast them, we appreciate what Eretz Yisrael is all about, what this new stage of Jewish development in our Parsha is all about. In our Parsha, the Torah says in regard to its census, Le'ela Techalak Ha'aretz, the census of Parshas Pinchas determines who receives a plot of land in Eretz Yisrael. This is the new generation who will enter the land. And the Torah is itself really priming us to compare and contrast the two censuses. Because the text itself both compares the Parshas Pinchas census to that of Parshas Bamidbar, when it says in the beginning of the census, Hashem says, or the Torah really says, they counted them. Mi ben asim shana v'mal kasher tziva Hashem as Moshe b'nei Yisrael hayotzim mi'eretz Mitzrayim. They're counting them the same way it says at the beginning of the census of our parsha here in Arvas Mavo. They're counting them the same way they were counted when they left Mitzrayim, i.e., in the beginning of the Sefer. That's the compare, and the contrast is at the end of the census when it says, however, this second census, it says at the end of our parsha censuses, this second census, which the next generation did, Moshe and Elazar Cohen did, there was no one left around from the first census, right? Which Moshe and Aaron did back almost 40 years before, right? Because the people died to Techet HaMeragel. Do you see how the text is both comparing our census to that census and contrasting? None of the people of the first census are still alive. These are more than two statements of, oh, they're counting them the same way they were counted then, and oh, but the people happen to be different. No, I believe the text is orienting us to compare and contrast. And we've touched on in the past a way to understand this contrast. The first census, the generation which left Mitzrayim and received Torah, they're the action-packed generation. Yitzias Mitzrayim, Matan Torah. They live the drama of Yiddishkeit. Yitzias Mitzrayim lived in real time. Matan Torah lived in real time. They were the formative generation, the Dardaya. They're the formative generation. But they're all in flux. They're all drama. The big events, drama, but lacking stability, right? Which is not an uncommon theme. Those who are in the action-packed space of the inception of the project, but are so sorely lacking stability, literal stability. They don't enter the promised land. Stability, grounding. They circle in the midbar, right? In a very actual sense, right? Not knowing, no base, right? And never knowing if tomorrow we're going to pack up camp and leave, or it's going to be 20 years we're going to be in this spot, or 2 days. Not a coincidence that they're living both a formative, dramatic existence and also a non-stable existence. Mashenkin the door, who's entering the land. They are not living the drama of Yetzias Mitzrayim on Torah. They are living the grounding of Jewish existence, literally living on the ground with stability. And in a certain sense, if we conceptualize this, it's a basic tension we have between drama and grounding and discipline. Think of a youthful formative period in your life, which really defined who you were. You found out about yourself, you made your commitments to Torah, but you weren't yet grounded. You didn't yet get married, you hadn't yet tied yourself down, which was right at that point. You didn't tie yourself down, you were adventurous, maybe you were a little reckless, right? But then there comes a time when stability is the key. And I have a derech, and it's clear what I do, and I come home to a wife and kids at night, and I'm largely continuing the path which I embarked on. Some Sefri Machshava conceptualize this in terms of male-female. Everything goes back to gender, right? Male and female, right? Which isn't a question of, forgive me for saying it, a binary question, simply of people who are male, people who are female. But really two sides of the human condition. The Mekubal say we all have a Chelek Zachar, Chelek Nekev in us. Largely the Chelek Zachar, right, is the conqueror, as the Torah says, V'kibshua, Derech L'shlichbush, the drive to get out there and do things and leave your mark, place your flag down on things. It's a drive, an external drive to do drama, action. But it could be very, very unstable, right? Ungrounded. While the feminine side within us is much more bias, home, base, structured. Though there are exceptions from a Kabbalistic perspective, the feminine side is more pragmatic, less adventurous. You know, everything comes with a cost. Again, I hate to engage in gender overgeneralizations, right? It's unintelligent to overgeneralize, right? But for what it's worth, you know, there's a sensitive subject, certainly in the secular world, where any discussion about gender patterns, people recoil from, but it's, you know, I think all of us, if we're honest, could appreciate studies which I see, which have shown brilliance shows greater presence on the masculine side. The world doesn't want you to hear that. But also mental illness, many believe, is high. It's not a coincidence. Again, I'm not engaged in black and white. There's plenty of both on both sides. Plenty of brilliance on both sides, and the machitza, plenty of mental illness on both sides. It's not cool, but it's not a coincidence. Talking again in gross generalizations, the adventurous side, these are a bit quixotic, romantic, a lot of potential, right? But not very grounded, right? Versus the grounded side. I want to trace this in the two censuses. How the first census of Parshas Bamidbar, the Yotzi Mitzrayim, the Dardeya, are, it's a very masculine period. While I believe, this is my chiddush for the evening, from a big picture, thematic perspective, Parshas Pinchas in the period of entering land is more feminine, more grounded. You recall our studies through the years of the first census of Parshas Bamidbar. That focuses for the very first time on Shvatim. Shvatim, right? Svarim Shmos and Vayikra, we have studied, are largely not Svarim about individuality and Shvatim. Parshas Bamidbar introduces Shevet, which is identity, finding yourself, and specifically Yotzei Tzava. Those engaged in public service, external, communal service, fighting in the army. Now, this whole focus on individuality, rugged individuality, allegiance in the army, leaving your house and being Yotzei Tzava, to me has a very masculine, right? It's almost like the sense of Parshas Bamidbar is dressed in fatigues. I mean that euphemistically. Yotzei Tzava, an individual man in the army, right? You count them, l'mishpachosim, l'feisavosim, each member of a shevet who's going to leave home and be involved in this big public enterprise of conquering. And I almost hear a certain echo in the text here. Bamidbar Parak Aleph Pasuk. First of all, Pasuk Beis, from the get-go, kol zachar l'kiklosim. It's not just a matter of fact, it's only counting males. It highlights, this is a male thing, from the get-go of the census, kol zachar l'kiklosim. And it, as you continue in the Pesukim, Dalet and Hey, the Itchem Yiyu, Ish, Ish Lamate, Ish, Rosh Lebeis Avosam, three times in one pasuk. Ish. The base of also. Fathers, patriarchal. And then pasuk hey continues. The Elish was Hanashem. So in the context of Tupsukim, you have like four or five patriarchal expressions followed by the intro Kol Zachar. It's masculine. Yeah, it is a thoroughly masculine census. I don't know if people think about it that way. Contrast that with Parshas Pinchas. Parshas Pinchas' census does not start off the word with the words Kol Zachar L'Gloson. It's true it is also counting Shvatim, right? It's true that it's also counting Shvatim, right? But it doesn't highlight, it does not say in the beginning of the census, it's only counting Sfarim. It doesn't say that. At the end of the census, after it counts Levi, it has as a postscript statement that in the case of Levi, it was Kol Zachar Mi Ben Chodesh V'mala. It doesn't even highlight it concerning Yisrael, the truism that it's only counting males. The masculinity is an understatement there. Right? And without any of that staccato echo, ish, it's incidentally counting what Beisavosa says there. Furthermore, it's not only under-highlighting Zachar and Ish. When it finally does mention Ish at the end of the census in our parasha, listen to what it says. Ube'eila lo haya ish mi p'kudei et Moshe. The men of the last census weren't alive. It hones in on Ish when it talks about those who are not here. And Rashi, the same, the Medrash renders that to mean. Yeah, the men of the last census are not alive. But the women are alive and are glorified. Ha ha, they love the land. They're making it the way the men can't. I'm going to trace a pattern. The understating of masculinity. And if anything, the pivoting towards feminine virtue. There weren't men left alive. And this census is highlighting. But the women are alive and kicking because they love the land and they survived Chedem Meraglim. I'm beginning to trace something here. And I'm going to go further. Not only are Tzharim understated or Nekevus glorified, but while Nekevus might not be formally counted in the census, Nekevus are prominently mentioned in the census. First of all, Sarach Bas Asher is mentioned in the census. She's not a Bamidbar. Yocheved is mentioned in the census. She's not a Bamidbar. Miriam is mentioned in the census. And in the postscript to the census, it glorifies the Menos Lavchad, which Chazal linked back to the prior statement. There were no women, men alive. There were women alive that Menos Lavchad were characteristic of the women who were Mechavas Hearts, loved Eretz Yisrael. Are you feeling the pulse in the text here? The masculine versus the feminine here, right? In fact, I'm going to argue that the entire rhythm of Parshas Bamidbar, masculine, fatigues, military, legions, the drive to leave home, right, is understated in the sense that while they are counted as Shvatim here, it doesn't mention Yotzei Tzava, and it actually introduces a different focus which doesn't appear in Parshas Bamidbar. Who knows what it is? 65? Mishpachos. It speaks about 65, Mishpachas HaChanuchi, Mishpachas HaPalui. Jewish people are not only tribes, they're families, with all the feminine connotations that Mishpacha does. Beis HaZewishto, and a woman is so family-centric, you know, parenthetically, right? There are some who believe that the word Mishpacha is related to the word Shefcha, right? A maid, a feminine connotation of a maid. Parenthetically, why a maid? There are those who suggest just like a maid is a feminine server of families here to serve each yachid. That bears some repeated, by the way. So many of us who find familial experiences to be less than servicing the yachid, right? People who find, in the worst cases, family encounters to be battering and difficult, right? Family is supposed to be a shifcha, these Bali Halashim believe, towards each yachid. But it's the overarching feminine dimension that's supposed to be servicing each yachid and nurturing, and as a mishpach, we're all here for each other. How beautiful, what a different world, what a different klal Yisrael. No, maybe this is aspirational when I saw this in the Bali Halashim. But again, it's that feminine mishpach. Isn't that a wonderful pattern here? And as we studied in the past, this is a census which is mishpacha-centric, feminine-centric. Of course, this this mishpacha is colored by the post, Pinos, the post znus focus following last week's parsha Pinos Mov, by Hiachri Amagev, it's counting survivors, it's following all the drama in the beginning of Parshas Pinchas, that Pinchas stood up for family values. It's a family colored census in so many ways, which I see as feminine, right? If that parsha was, if Parshas Bamidbar census is colored by, with green fatigues, okay, forgive me, forgive the American G.I. Joe, right? Parshas Bamidbar is green fatigues, right? Parshas Pinchas, you might say, is colored in pink, right? You got Sabra Eisen, right? And let me bring this out even from some of the intricacies. While they are Shvatim, because of the Mishpacha orientation, you'll notice an interesting thing. What's the order in which the Shvatim are counted? You remember, let's compare the order of the 12 tribes in Parshas, in the Parshas Bamidbar census, versus the order in Parshas Pinchas. Fair enough? So in Parshas Bamidbar, who was the first Shevet counted? Does anyone remember? In Parshas Bamidbar? Yehuda. It follows Seder to Gollum exactly. It does not start with Reuben. It's not birth order. It is. It follows the Seder to Gollum, the way they would travel in the desert, right? It is Yehuda, Yisachar, Zebulun, and so forth, right? It is not following the birth order of the family Yisrael of Parshas Bereishis, Sefer Bereishis. That's all in line with the Parshas Bamidbar thing, which is exclusively tribal, military-esque, communal service-esque. What is the type of work we're doing in the Midbar when we're machanos, in camp? Right? In tents and camps, the way we're traveling. Parshas Pinchas, on the other hand, does something magnificent. Does something very interesting. Parshas Pinchas, its order of Shvatim might seem odd, but when you pick up on it, it's very clear what's going on. It begins with Reuven, and then, right? It begins with Reuven, and then it goes from Reuven to Shimon, right? Birth order. But then it doesn't go to Levi. Then it goes to Gad, because Gad was in the same encampment as Reuven Shimon. And then from there it goes to Yehuda, right? Who's still early there in the birth order, right? But then it stays within Yehuda's machana, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun. If you read carefully, you'll see Parshas Pinchas is synthesizing the birth order focus and the machana focus. Right? You see that? It's not starting with Yehuda the way they would travel in the Midbar exclusively. It begins with the familial focus, but it does acknowledge that in the desert we have a certain tribal order the way we travel. I think it's recognizing that in this census, some of that tribal masculinity, machana battle, and some of that familial feminine birth order, it's all coming together here. That's the brilliance. It's tied up so nicely, right? And what to me this represents is that, yes, the formative events of Klal Yisrael's development, as characterized by the Dar HaMidbar of the first census, are very, very masculine, action-packed, defining who we are, in your face. And we will always think of the drama of Yetzias Mitzrayim, Matan Torah. But now comes a period of femininity, grounded, right down to earth. We're entering the land. It's not only a grounding place, but Eretz Yisrael gives us a sense of makom, stability. Yeah. Earth has that sense to it. Mother Earth is a Jewish concept. Right? Rashi and Bereishis speaks about the earth as the mother of Adam. And from that perspective, Eretz Yisrael is the mother of Klal Yisrael, right? If the Gula doesn't come, we will be reading on Tesh B'Av Eicha. It speaks about Sion as the mother, the Almana Mavli Baleha, Hashem her Baal has left. The aim of libanaha. You think about the Shava Bracha, Sos Tassis Vesagel HaAkara B'Kibbutz Banaha L'Tocha B'Simcha, right? Eretz Yisrael is always the mother. And remember that wonderful Chiddush we've studied in the past on Parsha Shlach? and the Meragim who speak ill of Eretz Yisrael. How do the Meragim die in the Midrashic imagery of Chazal? Right, their tongues grow long and grotesque and emit worms. That is a visceral, graphic, right, expression of Lashon Hara, gross tongue, emitting gross things. And where do those worms eat away at? Their navel, the imprint of the mud. That's because they attacked Eretz Yisrael. You see, it's all together. It's all in the Torah Seshem Tamim and the wondrous Pedic. Eretz Yisrael is a place, such a space, nurturance. Avir Eretz Yisrael Machken, the air cultivates the Jewish brain, right? It doesn't really define Klal Yisrael. It takes Yitzias Mitzrayim Matan Torah, and it brings it to life, right? And this perspective, Eretz Yisrael, is where we become a family. Nationally, we're a family here, and individually, we're a family here. We've studied in the past the very basic point that while in the Midbar, we were in a camp. Maybe this time of year when people are going to camp, some people who are staffing camp like that lifestyle and communal eating in the dining room. You remember those days? They're almost like living in a kibbutz. Yeah? Some people go for it. You know, but a fellow just told me, he said he found he couldn't keep a Shabbos meal in the dining room. Like his children would run away. He lost them already. Right? A bias ultimately involves a family has a given place where it lives. Right? That's regular family living. Given piece of real estate, distinct, our own house, right? And so on. That's what happened when we entered Eretz Yisrael. And from the get-go of the census, it says, this census upon entering the land is going to say, La'ilu kal ka'aretz. Now there's going to be separate real estate. No more communal socialist living, right? In the Midbar, maybe it was democratic socialism. Don't believe the democratic socialism charge here in America. I would like to think of the Midbar, when they were living in a shared existence, I would like to think it was pretty democratic with, of course, Hashem's influence. No more democratic socialism. Now it's a contradiction in expression. Okay, L'davoni, there's more such chavra to contend with, such self-identified chavra to contend with. But my point is, right, Eretz Yisrael leaving that camp, kibbutz-like existence, it's becoming family-like, individual family, a place where we have makom, a sense of bearings, a sense of tethering, you know. Rav Weinberg, but I'm sure many others, would always speak about how a bias really gives very successful men, whether in Ruchni or Zagashmitz, who are doing a lot of important things, including the Torah, outside the house, but could lose themselves in the glitz and the glamour and the externality, and it's bias that gives you a sense of anchoring in terms of who you are, right? As he would frequently say in other contexts, Torah itself could become an avodah zarah. One can lose themselves in learning Torah, in Torah activities, and believe the means is an end, right? And it's family life and the sense of identity therein, right, of a bias, which gives us that anchoring. That's the national family past. We've studied the meaning of Rashi's statement earlier in Chumash. On the Pasuk, V'otizana ha'aretz es altachalos bitchala has nosa v'osizna ha'aretz, that Eretz Yisrael becomes a place of znus, right? Rashi says it means the rain will rain elsewhere, not in Eretz Yisrael. Right, there'll be a znus. The rain won't be raining in Europe, it'll rain in other lands. And we've studied what that means, because rain is like the fertile male contribution. Came here, Vesarat Svalita Vitzmicha. It's from heaven. It's like the seed. It impregnates the earth. So when it rains in Eretz Yisrael, so it's a place of rain, special divine providence. The male Hashem, the Av, is seeding the ground, the Isha, Knesset Yisrael, as embodied by Eretz Yisrael, so then the children can eat from it, right? Eretz Yisrael becomes a place of Znus. It contradicts the whole essence of Eretz Yisrael. That is why Eretz Yisrael is so sensitive to Znus, as we see in Achrayim with Kedoshim. That is why it says, if you commit Znus in Eretz Yisrael, it will rain elsewhere. It will be as though the masculine seed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is as though Chalila hanging out with them, with the other lands, the other continents, the other countries, right? And that's seen as a znus in the words. Isn't that graphic? But that's the concept. This is a place of national and individual familial living, nurturance, stability, taking all that drama of prior Jewish existence and giving it concrete meaning. We've studied in the past that this is why Bris Mila, is the symbol of Eretz Yisrael, right? Hashem tells Avram, through Bris Mila you'll receive the land, which is why we mentioned Mila in the second bracha of Birchas Hamazon, Al Briska Shechasanta Biv Sareinu, because Mila, and what it connotes in terms of purity, in this arena in life and the reproductive organ of the body is really what Eretz Yisrael is all about as a place of family. And in a broader conceptual sense, what I want this new feminine familial book, because the Zohar Kiddush Tanit, not seen in Sparta, the pattern's very, very compelling, right? It's kind of sitting in my mind now what a certain Oleh who was very Matzliach Baruch Hashem, and I'm skeptical about Olim at certain stages in life, how well it's going to work for their family. Baruch Hashem, this individual who I know, this Mishpacha I know, who was Matzliach Baruch Hashem, they're still speaking to me a couple years out. In almost romantic terms, they're telling me, I felt like Yiddishkeit was a story when I was in Chutz Laaretz. In Eretz Yisrael, I feel like it's real. It's not a new tone, it's the same thing. I was marking some of that concept. It's grounding Yiddishkeit. The Yiddishkeit has a grounding, it's lived, it's real. I want to go further now. I want to suggest that if you see the two censuses of Parshas Pinchas as really the Pikudim, the Chumash HaPikudim, it's the double helix, the stuff of life of Knesset Yisrael, the masculine, Sheva, Dardea, focus, the drama, the becoming, with the grounding on the other hand. Our Parsha, as we said, is bringing them together. This census, which includes both Sheva, but also Mishpacha, male and female, gives new meaning to the Mishpacha framing in our Parsha censuses. Mishpachas HaChanuchi, Mishpachas HaPalui. Each Mishpacha is framed with the Yud and the Hey from Hashem's name. First the Hey and then prefix and then the Yud suffix. Chazal say this affirms the family purity which was in Mitzrayim. We studied this a lot in the past and many, many very, very interesting dimensions therein. Well, if Yud is a masculine letter, so right? And Hey is a feminine letter, that we know. Ish and Isha differentiate or differ in terms of Yud and Hey. You want to make a word masculine in Hebrew, you use a Yud Hey prefix. You want to make a word feminine, you use a Hey suffix. Right? Etymologically, Kabbalistically, conceptually, Yud and Hey are the masculine and feminine attributes of the divine coming together. Yud is Kenaga Chachma, the Hey is Kenaga Bina, and so forth. So here you have encoded in the census, which is joining the masculine and the feminine elements, a census of Yud Hey. But notice it's starting with the Hey and then the Yin, which always surprised me. Ha Chanuchi, Ha Poli, Hey prefix, Yud suffix. On some level, the Baruch Remes, I want to suggest, because our Parsha is about really the feminine focus of the land, but how it grounds the prior male focus, how it takes the seminal, I'm using that word very literally, takes the seminal events of Jewish history, it sees Mitzrayim, Mount Torah, and gives them meaning. It's really Hey and then Yud. It's the feminine focus retroactively grounding the Yud that existed already. That's why it's Hey and Yud. That is why I want to suggest the census in our Parsha, and really Parsha's Pinchas in general, it is focused not simply on femininity, but really how masculinity melts. I'm touching a little bit of a Kabbalistic concept here. The Mekubalim talk about the spheres of Yesod and Malchus, the sixth and seventh sphere, respectively. And they tell us Yesod is a very masculine sphere, as embodied by Yosef. Yesod is about taking all of the divine energies and gathering them and bringing them to that actualize in Malchus, which is the feminine. Yesod is the final stage of masculinity. It's the converter. Yesod is when all the exciting energies of Hashem, Chesed, Vura, coalesce and are ready to take shape and then take shape in Malchus, right? Which is why there's always a relationship between Yesod and Malchus. You see this in Sefer Shmuel. When Yonasan ben Shaul, who's from Rachel's side, who's Bechinas Midas Yesod, is a friend with David, Midas HaMalchus, right? Mekubalim understand, right? That is Yesod and Malchus, it's taking Yosef's Mita. Yosef is a very intimacy focus. That's his whole Mita. It's when it's not, this is, could be so misunderstood. It does not mean mama boy. Very, very masculine, but it's masculinity, which is very focused on intimacy. It's masculinity is very focused on not creating new energies, but readying the energies to become feminine, right? It's when we take experiences we had, and before they concretize, we enable them to concretize. We could give a separate shiur on this, but that is why in our parsha you will see a lot of Yosef here, a lot of Yosef here. Parsha's Pinchas is the parsha of Pinchas, who is a descendant of Yosef from his mother's side. It introduces the leadership of Yeshua, who's going to bring us into the land, who's a descendant of Yosef. And I'm going to argue Yosef brings us into the land. The land, which is the place where the yid becomes hey, the masculine becomes feminine, right? Yeshua brings us into the land. He fights the battle. He links the formative, the masculine stage of Jewish history with the feminine. The feminine is only going to concretize when we have a melech in Eretz Yisrael, and that's David, Midas HaMalchus, the feminine, right? Yes, and let me develop this pattern further for you, just in terms of appreciating how beyond simply a symbolism of the letters Yud and Hey in our parsha, how you see very clearly this progression of the final male energy becoming feminine. That's what's happening in our parsha. Pinchas, we're not in Eretz Yisrael yet. We're at the end of Dar HaMidbar. We're preparing to enter the land. Right? It's Yisod Mamash, if you think about it deeply. It's taking all the masculine formative experiences, and it's saying, no new things. No new battles. No new Ma'an Torahs. But take all this and prepare to enter the land. Yisod, masculine, prepare to become feminine. And hence all the Yosef writ large in our life over our parish. Let me bring this out for you a little more, but there are haremas. Haludabarhu, when you think about a yid and a hey, do you know any individuals in Jewish history who morph between a yid and a hey? Sarai, right? The yid of Sarai becomes Sarah, right? When she's at the inception of her mission, she's called Sarai, and then she becomes Sarah. Right? Because I'll say that means, as Rashi explains, Sarai, Hashem says, means she's my Malka. Sar means a queen, or officer. Sarai means she's mine. She hasn't yet made her impact on the world. Sarah means that she's the Malka of the whole world. Sarah in Kabbalah is connected to Midas HaMalchus. She's very, very feminine and expressive. I'm going to argue the Yud-Hei metamorphosis in Sarah reflects how the last aspect of Yisod is becoming Malchus. Well, listen how delicious this is. We all aren't the Medrash as kids. Hoshea ben Nun becomes Yehoshua. Where does that Yud come from? The Yud complained. The Yud is leaving Sarai's name. Where's it going? So Hashem said, I'll send you to Yehoshua. Right, so people learn a Medrash like this. Oh, they learn it so superficially, and they think, oh, it's a cutesy, and poor thing, little Yidola, where you got it? They don't, also this HaTorah, Malibus, and Midrash, like this, they don't get it. These letters are real and formative. When Sarai becomes Sarah, the cosmic force of Midas HaYesod, but it's Midas HaYesod, it's masculinity preparing to become feminine. Where do I go now? There's a force in the world. Sarah has become Sarah. She's achieved her mission. She's expressed all the potent potentials in actuality. There's a Midah called Yesod. Where does it go? It goes to Yeshua. Yeshua, from Yosef, Midah say Yesod, right? Yeshua is this linchpin between the masculine and the feminine. He's a Talmud. He's a Makabal for Moshe, right? But he's a myth, right? He is bringing us into the land. He's bridging the formative experiences with entering the land. It's only Dove and Malchus, the feminine, which is going to concretize it. Right? Right? Perhaps in a future seer, we'll study a delicious pattern how Yehoshua is connected as forebearer Yosef and brings the whole intimacy of Yosef, the intimacy theme, full circle. I believe, this is wonderful. This is so delicious. Yeshua, as the Yosef take two, he has an Aches Potiphar up on the toe. Can anyone guess who that is? He has an Aches Potiphar Latov. Who does Yeshua ultimately marry? Rachav Hazona, the Gemara says in Megillat Daf Yadal Beis. He marries a Goyisha harlot that converts, right? The drama is too great. Yeshua, who's descendant of Yosef, Midas HaYesod, he marries a Goyisha harlot, and it's Lekdusha. And not only that, what is the Lashon of the Gemara in Megillah? Right? What else does the Gemara say in Megillah later? It says in the Agadata there, Rachav was so attractive, initially flirtatious. Kola Omar Rachav Rachav Miyad Nikri. Just saying her name would bring Tumas Keri. Yosef was Nashal Keri with Ashes Potiphar. Yeshua, of course, Kula Lakdusha, right? And the fascinating thing is Yosef yearned to be in the land. That's why he was writ larger than life in our parsha. Right? When I was saying Yosef is in our parsha very much, it's because I maybe this wasn't clear. Not only did Yeshua and Pinchas from Yosef, but Rashi the Beno Slavchot, who loved the land, from Yosef. And Rashi says Yosef is the symbol of the love in the land, which our parsha is all about. Sorry if I didn't stress that enough. Yosef wanted to be buried in the land, right? And in body, he had to enter the land. Remember me, bring my bones into the land. Moshe, Yeshua, bring him into the Moshe beginning, Yeshua, the Redeemers, bring him into the land, and Sefer Yeshua ends. And the last narrative in Sefer Yeshua is they buried Yosef in the land. That is because Yehoshua, the descendant of Yosef, brings Yosef into the land. That's because Midas HaYesod is taking all the energies of the Chutz La'aretz formative experience, like the Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yosef brought us into Mitzrayim. Yosef created those formative experiences. He needs to enter the land, but it only happens through Yeshua. I'm going to suggest it's not a coincidence that because Yosef never makes it to the land in life, something is lacking in the shlemus of his Midas HaYesod. Something, there's a symbolism here. There were females he had to avoid with tremendous, tremendous gvura, right? Yesod wasn't yet ready to express itself in every malchus, right? Right, and his mistress, the Mida Malchus, towards him, right, she was an authority over him. He had to suppress himself. Not a coincidence, Yeshua, who's entering the land the way Yosef was in Gullus. In Gullus, Midas HaYesod can express itself. The female is the wrong female. It's not an Eretz Yisrael dick. It's Eretz Mitzrayim dick. Think about all these correlations deeply that I'm saying. Midas HaYesod in Chutz La'aretz, i.e., when you're not with the right femininity, Midas HaYesod says, don't fall prey to temptations. Midas HaYesod, intimacy focused though it is, invites discipline, because it says you must find the right expression. You have a lot of masculine energy. You have to find the right expression. You dare not fall to the wrong one. And Yosef had a lot of temptation towards Ashes Potiphar. Amid its of Keri, he held himself in, because you're not in the right place yet. But when Yeshua brings Yosef into the land, Yosef's descendant, Midas HaYesod is now in the zone again. It's in Eretz Yisrael. And the expression of that femininity of Eretz Yisrael is realized in Rachav, the very first female in the land who welcomed Klal Yisrael into the land and converted with her. And the metamorphosis when Eretz Canaan became Eretz Yisrael is realized in the body of Rachav herself, who's a Canaanist and then becomes a Yisraelis. Let you understand how she is the embodiment of the whole character of the feminine land, right? Now becoming a receptacle for all of the Jewish energies. And this all takes effect when Yeshua, who's the Yosef Latov, the Yosef in the land, right, is going to be able to now marry the Isha Nachris Lekdusha, the Malchus, right? And that's the Rachav theme. And it's not a coincidence that therefore the Yud from Sarah plants itself on Yeshua, that's representing, right, that last pre-Malchus, as we're saying. The linchpin between all the formative energies and the expression then, right? We'll have to unpack this in the further. Just so exciting, right? And that's why the Yud and the Hey in our Parsha, the Hey and the Yud, I should say, in our Parsha, which is very Yosef-dick, and Yeshua is rises to greatness. He was selected as a leader. I think it's all an echo to Sarah. Yud, Hey, Yeshua. It's not a coincidence also that Yehoshua's name change from Hoshea to Yehoshua is associated with his trip to Eretz Yisrael, right? The Yikro Moshe Loshe Benun Yehoshua davening that he is successful in the Meraglim story, which is when he's entering the land. I'll follow up with questions afterwards. I look forward to hearing. Right, entering the land, right? Midas HaYesod, right? The formative experiences, the masculine is now going to concretize in the feminine, right? You also find something interesting we've studied in the past, the Gemara, which says the reason why times in Tanakh Yosef is called Yehosef. He has a hey added to his name. It represents when he overcame the challenge of Eishes Potiphar. And we've suggested that that's the yud and the hey of the divine name in our Parshas Pinchas, which reflects purity, family purity. Not a coincidence that it's the yud and the hey, but I believe in a certain sense it's the yud and the hey from Sarai in our Parsha. Right. Again, I'm making very quick allusions to things we've studied in the past. The pasuk where Yosef is called Yehosef, the lashon of the pasuk is Eidus B'Yehosef, a testimony to Yosef in Mitzrayim to his moral purity, and that is a foreshadowing of the lashon of Chazal in our parsha that the yud and the kei of family purity was called Eidus L'Yisrael. The lashonos are very, very, very similar. And hopefully, it's becoming apparent to everyone, right? Those who got the general theme, those who got all the tzushtels I was briefing, I just want a sense of the scope here, the way it's all coming together here, right? We're having the shift here from the very masculine focus, the formative experience of Dar HaMidbar, battle fatigues, Yotzei Tzava, to more of the familial order. And I will finish with the following observation. Though this is Kabbalistic and mystical and needs to be decoded a bit, right? There is a concept in Kabbalah that as much as Malchus, the final feminine stage, it's the execution, it's when all the exciting potentials and energies happen. But there's a concept that Sof Masa B'Machshava Tchila, Malchus in the final feminine stage, is always really reflecting what the beginning of the process was about. Everything which happens in Eretz Yisrael really is fulfilling the original plan of Judaism. We begin with Eretz Yisrael, Sefer Bereishis. Hashem promises us Eretz Yisrael and Sefer Bereishis. And the rest of Chumash is the path to get there. It's Yisrael, Mount Tovis, the very masculine phase that gets the feminine Eretz Yisrael. Right? The feminine is the beginning, the feminine is the end. The masculine is the means to get there. All of the six midos, which are largely masculine, right? Certainly Chesed, certainly Yisod, right? Until you reach Malchus. Where am I going with this in terms of Parshas Pinchas? And I'll leave it with this. You remember I mentioned that our Parsha is looking at the Shvatim less with the military Yotzei Tzava focus and more with the familial focus of Bereishis. And we said that for that reason, there's more of the birth order of Bereishis, right? Well, something interesting to ponder, right? The families in this week's parasha, the 65 families, right? The 12 Shvatim have 65 families, Mishpachas HaChanuchim, Mishpachas HaPalui. How are the families divided, right? So Rashi says they're divided based on the people who entered Mitzrayim. There were 70 people who entered Mitzrayim, but the families from them who survived, right? The settlers in Mitzrayim, it's their families, right? So if you really think about it, it is the people who descended down to Mitzrayim in Parshas Bereishis and Parshas Vayigash, the 70 Yotzei Mitzrayim descend down, right? Who found families, as we see in Parshas Shmos. Be'elu Shmos b'nei Yisrael ha'bam Mitzrayim as Yaakov ish u'beis obo, right? The formative Jewish experience is before we're a Jewish nation, when the Shvatim are a Jewish family and forming individual families, right? What's very interesting is those people descending down to Mitzrayim, in the count of those descending down to Mitzrayim, does it count men, women, or both? The 7 of the Yotzei Mitzrayim, a Parshas Vayigash, who, mind you, we already see have a presence in our Parshas. It's the people who descend down to Mitzrayim who are found in the families who are counted in our Parsha. So it's largely men, but there are two women who are counted. Sarach Bas Asher, and according to Chazal, Yocheved. Because it says in our parasha, Yocheved was born in Mitzrayim, implying she was already in utero on the way down to Mitzrayim in Parshas Vayigash. So Halun Dover, who that in the most precise way, our parasha is actually our parasha with its masculine familial focus is going back to the way the Jewish people were, right, on the way down to Mitzrayim. Right, it's counting the same people. It's counting the people who went down to Mitzrayim now in family form, the 65 families. And it's counting the same women who are counted on the way down to Mitzrayim I believe this has to do with the Sof Masa B'machshava Tchilo, before the great dramas, the great formative events, the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Matan Torahs, on the way down to Mitzrayim, we were already a family with a feminine tinge, and that's been returned to now at the end of the story. The feminine starts, the feminine ends, the masculine's in the middle. I know this is very esoteric, but the idea here is that the dramatic phases of the Jewish experience, the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Matan Torahs, are only the means. Ultimately, it's all about the stability, the grounding of living in Eretz Yisrael, family life, when things are real, not just a story, as that Olet told me. And yet, in Chutz La'aretz, everything was a story. In Eretz Yisrael, I'm living it. It's stable. It's alive. It's family thick. That is really the sentiment which I want everyone to walk away with in terms of all the patterns we traced, how the two censuses, the census of Parshas Bamidbar and the census of Parshas Pinchas, are relating to each other, the masculine with the feminine, the yud and the hey. May we all be zocha in our own lives to synchronize all the excitement, all the formative experiences with all of the grounding stability. I felt that with this group would be open to not only the creativity tonight, but to deal with some these Kabbalistic dimensions in the realm of Midos. Some of it we do understand, some of it is beyond most of us, right? But at least have some coordinates there, and it opens up a whole world of Torah, which is really very breathtaking to behold. The Yesod with the Malchus, the formative, with the grounding. Thank you very much.